From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the streets of three different U.S. cities. In one, you'll see many pedestrians, cyclists, people riding buses and trolleys to get around. In another, you'll see cars, for the most part, but city buses and cyclists using bike lanes here and there. And in the third city, you'll see minimal pedestrians and bike-friendly infrastructure. The three cities we're talking about here, San Francisco, Rochester, and Shreveport, Louisiana specifically, they were all ranked on a list of 150 biggest U.S. cities to live in without a car. The list was compiled by the company LawnStarter in January and used a bunch of different metrics. And in that month's results, San Francisco ranked number one in the country. Rochester came in number 37, behind Buffalo, which was ranked number 30, by the way. Shreveport, Louisiana, was in last place at number 150. Now, they have re-upped that list in July, but a lot of the key metrics are the same. And the list took a number of metrics into account. Walkability, transit ridership, transit accessibility, safety, and climate. What can lower-ranking cities learn from San Francisco in terms of walkability and access to public transit? What do we learn from the cities that are struggling? What has Rochester been able to do to start moving up the list? And then, unfortunately, in midsummer, we pulled back a little bit, but we're going to compare the scene in all of these cities this hour. And I want to welcome our guest in studio as we do our best to make sure we've got guests. We're going to have guests, we think, from San Francisco and from Shreveport as soon as we get our tech up to speed. So they'll hang there for a second. But Jason Partika is with me. He's a board member and chair of the bus work group at Reconnect Rochester. Hi, welcome. Nice to see you in person.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
So let me just start, Jason, with the idea that Rochester would be number 37 out of 150 U.S. cities. If you had a guess going into last January, does that sound about right to you?
No, I feel like that's a little low. I would guess maybe out of 100, I would...
Out of 150.
Out of 150, I guess maybe 37 is a little better. I would put us above average, so 150 would, I guess, 75.
Yeah, okay.
So that's not terrible then.
And what about the last 10 years tells you that where we've come from and where we are now, we ought to be at least in the top half? Compare how you sort of evaluated Rochester's culture a decade ago and what's changed.
Oh, there's been a lot of changes. Just even in the infrastructure, the transit center was built, so we don't have people needing to wait outside in the cold for transfers anymore. There's been, I couldn't even tell you how many miles of bike lanes, probably over 100 miles of bike lanes, making it a lot more safer and easier to get around, sidewalk improvements, that kind of thing. And even just in the last couple of years, too, maybe one of some of the silver linings of COVID is the new walk from home stuff, allowing people to maybe go down to being a one car family and having more time and day and more flexibility to take transit and biking.
I imagine, Jason, all of the work that you, Reconnect Rochester, have done in the last decade, you're not going to move up on a list like this without intention. And not every city prioritizes things the same way here. What about Rochester's scene? What has made the most difference in the last 10 years? Is it government decisions? Is it citizen sort of grassroots activism? What's been changing things?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I like to think, grassroots activism helps as a grassroots activist. But, I think about the recent 2034 plan. I remember, comparing that to the comprehensive plan from 2000. There was just new language, things about multimodalism, bike lanes, rapid transit kind of thing that just wasn't in 2000. I think we've done just a good job of introducing these ideas into just the public in general. And then some really good investments have been done too. We've got new technology. People are able to use things like Google Maps and the transit app to find it easier. The bus system is just easier to navigate when you have technology helping you. Fare capping makes it cheaper. You never have to pay more than $3 a day now. Or $56 a month, things like that. New bike boulevard systems that have been, that stuff that starts at the federal level and then comes to the local level as well, getting bike boulevards and bike paths set up. So I think there's been a lot from all levels of government just investing in this stuff.
There recently was, at least on the county level, discussion and passage of legislation aimed at making sure there's safe passing distance with bicycles, et cetera. Do you think those are the kinds of reflections that at least the policymakers understand that there is a kind of a groundswell of interest?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that's even on the table, and the fact that it's not like, you know, a proverbial third rail. Like sometimes that would have been untouchable. It's like, you know, anything that would have might impacted like automobile prioritization, even like a really good safety measure like that, nobody might want to even bring it up because of backlash. But now it's something that's safe to talk about. It's something that gets you political capital if you pass it, that kind of thing. And I think as more and more people bike too, you know, you see these generational shifts that we've been talking about before, like younger people, you know, there's delays in how quickly they get their driver's license and then and first car purchases. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's just more empathy with things like bike riders too.
I actually think what Jason's saying right there is really, really important. And, you know, I suspect we'll get some feedback from listeners. I'm wondering if maybe listeners have kids who are delaying getting their driver's license, as if the second you turn 16, it's what you should be focused on. But I sort of felt that way when I was that age in the 90s. It was like, well, you better. I mean, you're turning 16, you're going to get left behind. Now it's a very, very different thing. And so if you want to send a note to the show, connections@wxxi.org, I am curious to know what sort of the teenagers in your sphere are doing about that. Was it different for you, at least? I mean, I feel like that part of the culture really has changed a lot.
Yeah, I was... my parents started teaching me to drive when I was 15, technically. Like
big empty parking lots that we had?
I actually lived at the end of a dead end road. So it was kind of one of those things where like I could drive up and down the street and there wasn't a lot of traffic. So stuff like that. And then actually, even earlier than that, my family owned a dairy farm growing up. So if there's any farmers, you know, you learn to drive a tractor even an earlier age than that, because they're almost oversized lawnmowers, but an actual automobile. Yeah, I was 15 years old the first time. I was like, just give it a try so you're ready when you're 16.
I thought maybe after years of Jason Partica and his colleagues in the movement talking about these big empty parking lots, I thought you were finally going to say something nice about these lots, that's at least where kids learn to drive. That's where my dad would take me in the Cleveland area. We would go to those big empty lots, especially on snowy days where he said, you got to learn to deal with what happens when you start to slide. And those big lots were at least good for that. Well, let's talk a little bit about those big lots, because I don't know what San Francisco, Shreveport, et cetera, have, and we'll talk to them coming up here. But here in Rochester, we still have plenty of those, don't we? Do you feel like there's been movement, or do you still drive around the city going, boy, a lot of big islands of parking still?
Yeah, I'm not seeing any infill that I can think of off the top of my head. And I kind of wonder, like, where I work for Rochester Regional Health in a big administrative building, and we're still work from home, basically. And I was able to go back for a month, and I was like one of the only people who chose to go back. But same thing, huge parking lot that's just completely empty, like hundreds of spaces. And I kind of wonder, anybody probably could in the middle of the day take their kid there and turn to drive. But B, like, what would ever fill that in if we ever come back, that kind of thing?
Well, so for regional health, that's a good example. There are certain buildings and there are certain places that have big seas of parking lots. We could think of malls, for example, that might be entirely repurposed. And all of a sudden you've got that space becomes a campus. You can fill it in with green, et cetera. But where you are at Regional Health, if half the workforce stays remote, what happens to that? I don't even know what you do with that space. Do you?
I don't know either. It's kind of like you said, you might just turn it to green space or let nature reclaim it. Like, it's big enough that I was talking with someone, like, you could put like a restaurant in the middle of that parking lot and there'd be enough parking for the restaurant around it still because the lot is so big. So maybe you could develop it like that, but I don't know. You know, that's right where it's actually right across the street from the old Medley Center and stuff like that. So it's kind of that part of Aroundacoin is kind of overbuilt anyways for like shopping and restaurants and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I kind of draw parallels to, we did this in reverse, right? When sprawl started in the 60s and 70s, people left the cities of Rochester, and a lot of those houses were abandoned and they've been condemned, and there's grass lots there now. And now we might have to start seeing that in the suburbs. We're just going to have to abandon it and it's just tear up the development and grass lots.
So what happens next here that says to you, we're going to go from 37 on this list, we're going to pass Buffalo, we're going to move up to the 20s, we'll get to the teens. What has to happen to really continue Rochester on this trend upwards in these rankings?
I think it's actually just scaling up a lot of what we have. So we did start with the new Reimagine RTS service back in May. And that's been working great, the 15-minute, 30-minute headways. Everything's quicker now. There's less layovers in town, and that's something you can just simply scale that up, turn the 30-minute ones into 15-minute ones. It's a problem you could literally throw money at, and it's great. So if you have, like, especially if you live in the city and work in the city, or as long as it's just one destination or your origin's in the city, it's pretty simple. And then same thing, more bike lanes, more bike boulevards, so people feel safer biking. One of the things that's going on, anybody who drives down East Main Street knows, is like it's a big construction site right now between East Goodman and Culver. And one of the things they're doing there is putting bike paths up on the curb so it's not down in the street. Makes it a lot more safer for cyclists, makes them feel safer, more inviting too.
We've got some feedback from listeners we'll share, and I think we can try now to bring in our guests who are joining us from other cities. If you're just joining us, we're talking about this list that came out in January, and Rochester 37th out of 150 American cities, according to data compiled by a company called LawnStarter. And they're looking at, you know, essentially living in U.S. cities if you don't have a car. What's the best cities to live in down to last? And listen, Rochester's been all over the place on these lists. We're not denigrating anybody on any place because everybody's got work to do. Let me bring in from San Francisco, a mobility consultant in the San Francisco Bay Area. Stacy Randiker-Bartlett is with us. Stacy, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
And on the line with us from Shreveport, Louisiana, Liz Swain is Executive Director of Shreveport Downtown Development in Louisiana. Hi, Liz. Thanks for making time for us.
Absolutely. Glad to be with you.
Stacy, you're number one, San Francisco number one on this list. So let's start with why you think you end up number one on the list of living in an American city without a car.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny because I'm all about living without a car and very happy about it. But I'm continually bemoaning that they don't do enough for us in terms of making protected bike lanes, et cetera. And so it makes me very sad to think that we're the best. I agree, it's probably true, but we have so far to go to make it, more livable and less car dependent in this, certainly in this city and in the country as well. I grew up very much like you, Jason. I grew up in rural Pennsylvania. And shout out to my dad, a happy birthday, Dad. And he's still back there. And yeah, driving in parking lots. I lived on a dead end road too. You know, you learn to drive as soon as possible because you just can't get anywhere without a car. Mm-hmm. After college, I moved straight to New York City, and there is no car there. You do not need a car. It is a liability to have a car in and around Manhattan. And so I didn't. And but then when I moved to San Francisco, the first thing I did was get a car because I didn't understand how you could live without one here. It didn't seem possible. Everyone that I knew that was here had one. And then fast forward, I get my first bike as an adult in 2014. And in 2017, I gave that car up. And I'm a mom with two teens. They take the bus. And my daughter just turned 16, in fact. And at that age, I had already been chomping at the bit to get my license. I've talked to my daughter about it. And it's like, you know, it just doesn't make any sense here. She is so fluent in Muni and really loves the independence. And it's like, I will help you learn to drive. We will pay for lessons. When you're older, it just doesn't make sense to put a kid behind, in a two-ton box, a loaded weapon, as my dad called it when he was teaching me to drive.
So if you feel like, but if you feel like you've got a long way to go, you know, that Stacy, this is a very interesting thing I think to hear in Rochester because, you know, this is a town that probably has some of the same kind of experiences you had growing up and thinking about. Maybe evolving modes of transportation, but do you have a checklist of one, two, or three things you think that are within reach that would make your city even stronger in this area? I mean, we all sort of thought you've reached something along the lines of utopia for people without a car.
Oh gosh, yeah, no, it's there's still a long way to go. I mean, we have transit that other places don't. In fact, One of my my best friends from college she lives in Pittsburgh, and we bemoan, you know, the fact of, you know, schlepping kids to places. And when my kids were younger, before it was transit age, I was just like them, driving them everywhere. And the list of places that she and my girlfriends up and down the East Coast, you know, they basically are spending, you know, morning, afternoon, and from 4 to 7 driving kids to all their various stuff, because until they have their own license, that's just the only way it is in these suburban type communities. And so I'm lucky now that I barely have to do any of that. It's only for an obscenely early school start time across the city that we carpool, or soccer tournaments and things like that, that I even think about getting into a car with my kids.
Are you surprised at San Francisco being number one?
I mean, it's tough. I've been all around the country, you know, visiting for work or to visit friends, et cetera. And I guess it is the best. But when you live here and you're out there, you know, putting your body on the line, riding a bike, trying to fight with the cars, if there isn't some sort of protection there, it doesn't feel sustainable. You know, it's like, it shouldn't be the case that only brave people can ride a bike. We should be sending all of our kids out there on bikes. Anybody who's able, should be able to feel comfortable riding a bike. And, we're just not there yet. I mean, there's entire supervisor districts that have zero protected bike lane. Mm. And so while it's better, so much better than most places, we see the gaps, you know, experiencing it every day.
Is it a matter of just having space to create those protected lanes, or do you think it's just not been prioritized?
Ha! That is the question. What is your priority? I'm sure Jason is familiar, and possibly you too, Evan, about the term induced demand. And the more space you give to something, the more it will grow. Mm-hmm. And adding lanes to your highways doesn't get you less congestion. It may temporarily, it just invites more cars. So in the comparison I love to give is San Francisco is 47 square miles. It can't sprawl because it's surrounded on water by three sides. Guess what else is that size? Disney World. How many cars drive through Disney World? You drive to the edge of it, you park, and then you're on a tram, a monorail, you're walking, et cetera. It's the quote-unquote happiest place on earth, and there are no cars, except for the bumper cars or whatever. So if you can do it in Disney World, you can do it here in San Francisco. And I'm not even saying get rid of all the cars, but if we don't drastically decrease the number and the space that we give to them, you know, it's kind of pointless. And if we can't do it here in a climate that is, you know, incomparable to, you know, we have no snow, we have no sweltering heat, or very rarely, where can you do it? So we should be leading. We should be, you know, number, you know, negative 157 or something in contrast to other places, instead of just number one, because this is not the top.
Well,
what it should be.
In a moment, we're going to come back after we talk to Liz and talk to all of our guests about whether these changes, whether they're happening in Rochester, Shreveport, San Francisco, if they are happening in a way that is meant to be accessible for everyone. Because, I think walkability has taken on a certain air to it. Jason, I know you care very much about making sure it's as egalitarian as possible. I'm also curious to know if you have any thoughts about induced demand and creating that interest. Because a lot of people, I think, assume if you add traffic lanes, well, that solves the traffic problem. And often it does not.
Yep. Yeah, no, induced demand is something that we've known about forever. And, you know, it works. You know, increasing highway works for maybe 18 months. Because it's like, okay, traffic does go down. And then everybody's like, oh, it's quicker to take this new expanded highway now. So people shift over to that and it just fills right back up. So, and it doesn't solve any kind of traffic problems.
Can you do it with bike lanes, though? Can you induce more demand by creating that infrastructure? It probably happens pretty, especially when you go from zero to wherever you go with it, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's definitely pent-up demand for people who want to ride a bike. They want to save money on a car. or it's just a lot of times for journeys that are less than like 3 miles, it's quicker to take a bike sometimes, like especially when you consider door to door. You know, I can take a bike from my front door to the front door here at WXXI, comparing to get in my car, find a parking garage space, get them down, or feed a meter, walk through. It can be a lot quicker. So it's just a matter of, like she mentioned, like feeling safe when you're on the bike.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rochester, number 37, you just heard the story of San Francisco, number one and still a long way to grow. And number 150 out of 150 is Shreveport, Louisiana. And Liz Swain is the executive director of Shreveport Downtown Development in Louisiana. When you hear some of the stories of why, I think this will be very instructive and I think very helpful, even though every city is different. Every environment is different. Liz, I really appreciate you making the time. What did you make of Shreveport's place on the list?
Oh, well, I hate Liz. And really and truly, the reason I hate them is because a lot of times it's just not an apples-to-apples comparison. So when you were talking about San Francisco is a beautiful city, and I love it very much, and it is about 47 square miles. And the last data that I just pulled up was about 874,000 people. Shreveport is 123 square miles, and we've got about 188,000 people. You can see that we have grown in a way that is hard to sustain. And this can be a future conversation because sustainability is incredibly important. So we've got lots of miles that people have to cover. They can do it relatively quickly in a car. There's no place in Shreveport, and our sister city right across the river is called Bossier City, Louisiana, that you can't be in about 15 minutes. And so we've put a lot of emphasis on our roadways, unfortunately. And so here's where we are. We do have, though, a really vibrant public transit organization called Sportran. They've just recently built a new multimodal facility. They have done away with the old hub and spoke past of you have to come to the main facility in order to get on the bus to get to your neighborhood, even though it would have been far easier to be able to just transfer to another bus. So they've done away with all of that to make it easier for people to use public transit. And the city is definitely taking steps to try to engage people in walking more and biking more. But another thing you have to remember about Shreveport, and this is vastly different than San Francisco and way different than Rochester, we're hot a lot of the year down here. It's super uncomfortable to get on a bicycle and ride to your office building. You are going to be a sweaty mess by the time you get there. And so that is something, too, that you have to kind of factor in when you're talking about a walkability and bikeability in a city.
How much does climate, I mean, climate has a ranking in this list, and I'm wondering how much climate change and climate has an impact on your efforts to become, less car dependent.
I think a lot, quite honestly. I think a lot. If people are going to an office, you've got to have a certain look and smell about you when you get there. Generally, you want to look nice and present well. And if you don't have a place to shower at your office, and most of our office buildings don't have that facility available to them, then you're going to think twice about riding a bicycle. You're going to think twice about walking, even if your house is in a nearby neighborhood, which still may be a mile away. So, yes, and we are, it feels to me, getting hotter and a little bit more humid. And, of course, South Louisiana has just had Hurricane Ida come through in the past couple of days. And so we're seeing more situations like that as well. It's not an excuse not to be more walkable and more bikeable, not at all. But those are things that we do have to factor in. How do we deal with it? Do we encourage offices to invest in a communal shower? It's kind of a chicken and an egg thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that offices and businesses would be willing to do that if a significant number of their employees or potential employees said to them, I want to ride my bike, and this is what's preventing me from doing it, and if I can't ride my bike, I don't want to work here, right? That would really encourage those businesses to look at that. But if they don't have that push, then they're not going to invest that money. So it really is a challenge.
Yeah, and Liz, I would be remiss if I didn't just at least point out, I mean, listeners here may not know the just quite the geography of Louisiana. I know you guys aren't on the coast and you're not exactly right in the eye of where the storm was, but can you let us know how, at least in Shreveport in your region, how things are going down there with the storm coming through?
We had no issues whatsoever. We're in the far northwest of the state. We're actually, if you're kind of thinking of a map in your head, we're right at the point where Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, and Oklahoma is not too far away from us. So our city has always been kind of westward leaning because we're close to Texas, and we used to be the last city before that foreign country of the Republic of Texas way back in the day. But our friends and neighbors to the south really took a beating, trees down, power out, and so we are very concerned about them. We've got shelters set up here to assist them as we can. We're sending first responders down to help, so we're definitely keeping them in our thoughts.
All right, so after we take our only break of the hour, we're going to come back with Liz Swain, Stacy Randecker Bartlett, and Jason Partika, joining us from Shreveport, Louisiana, San Francisco, California, and right here in Rochester, as we take a look at this list of Lawn Starters' top 150 cities by size, ranking them based on how it is to live in a city if you don't own a car. And I'm very impressed with Liz Swain in Shreveport for not only being here on this program, having this conversation, but I think being clear-eyed about where they are in terms of demand, some of the factors that will impact. I don't think everybody has the highest, exactly the same ceiling when it comes to living without a car, but maybe, you know, there's room for growth everywhere. So we're going to continue that conversation on the other side of this only break, and I've got a lot of listener feedback. Listeners, if you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. That's toll-free. You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. We're right back. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about pornography and how kids discover it. A number of writers have recently written that it is time for schools to engage with pornography, not to teach it in classrooms, but to teach about it, to make sure kids understand what it is. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about cocktail culture. The Rochester Cocktail Revival is back this week, back in full force. Events at a lot of different places with a lot of different themes, and we'll talk about that. A lot of people throughout the pandemic have been turning to, well, maybe a nightly cocktail, maybe making cocktails for the first time at home, maybe even getting into mocktails if you want something non-alcoholic. We're talking about cocktail culture next hour.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Listeners have been asking a number of questions about bike culture in these cities, and we'll talk about that as we look at American cities ranked 1 through 150 if you don't own a car. And our guests are joining us from Rochester, San Francisco, and Shreveport, Louisiana. Different parts of the list, different kinds of culture, different climates, and frankly, different levels of demand from their public about whether they want to kind of create more of this culture. Liz Swain was just talking to us about some of the challenges in Shreveport, which I think are very much fair. And so, Liz, can you give me a sense for what you think the demand is in Shreveport for a more walkable culture, a more multimodal culture? Does this come up in conversations? Is this just part sort of a hipster niche, or is it becoming more mainstream? What have you seen lately on that?
Well, I think it's definitely becoming more mainstream, but it's not there yet. It's not there yet. We are still looking at the ways to make our highways more high speed, to make them wider, to make them faster, as opposed to looking at ways to slow us down a little bit and give us more opportunity for walking and biking. There are definitely voices out there who are trying to turn the conversation in that direction, but it's easy to be drowned out. Just to give you an example, there is an inner city connector that would come basically right adjacent to our downtown that has been debated for a number of years. It's an interstate about 1.4 miles that would connect two pieces of interstate that have a gap in between them, and that has been so hotly debated over the last number of years. It's going to be incredibly expensive. It's going to go through a traditionally, historically black neighborhood, and lots and lots of conversation about that on both sides. But many of the business interests in town would love to see that completed. They believe that it's going to be economic development times a zillion going through this portion of our city. And so, you know, while we could take that $1 billion that would go into this 1.4 miles and do tremendous things with walkability, with pedestrian amenities, with enhancing our public transit system, with all these things that we're talking about. But so that's where we are. We're still trying to kind of change that narrative a little bit here.
All right, let me get some feedback from listeners. On the phone first, this is Fred in Rochester. Hi, Fred, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, sir.
Good to talk to you. Last time we talked was when Adam Bello signed that 3-foot rule into effect, Kerry's law.
Yep.
Starting back, it's not that I don't know cars. I grew up in a rural area, and I learned to drive in the fields. I taught my kids out in the suburbs in a parking lot that was empty on a Sunday. I probably started driving around 12 years old. Of course, you know, was out in an open field, so I could do that. But I've been riding a bike now since mid-2000s. And I haven't seen a whole lot of culture change in the city of Rochester. We just enacted a new law, and just after that, I got hit on Park Avenue by a guy that told me he couldn't cross the double yellow line, so he squeezed next to me, and oops, I hit you. I had somebody on Dewey Avenue while I was almost to a bike lane, because Dewey Avenue has bike lane, and then it doesn't, then it does again.
Right.
Somebody going by in a SUV with kids in the car threw something at me. So, you know, it's a negative culture that we have towards bike and walking. The RPD does not, as far as I can see, enforce people stopping for pedestrians in a crosswalk anywhere in the city. I used to think it was just on Lake Avenue, but it's anywhere in the city. I see police officers going through, and when I catch their number, I call the city. Going through and people standing in a crosswalk. I stopped for somebody in a crosswalk and a guy behind me threatened me, and I dialed 911. The RPD got there and chewed me out and told me to get moving. So it's not being enforced. We had some really good laws, the crosswalk, the 3-foot rule. Those are really good ideas, but they need enforcement. And on the scale, on the ranking, when they factor in the weather, that's going to hurt Rochester no matter how great Rochester might be, because I bike in the wintertime, and it is rugged. You know, and there's no amount of heat so far that has deterred me like a foot of snow. So it's, you know, there's a lot of things that factor into that. And for whatever reason, I can't get any traction on getting traffic to slow down on Lake Avenue. It's a 35-mile-an-hour zone, and it's a speedway. They go faster there than they do on 490.
Well,
so,
Fred,
you know, we've got to really dig into those things, those rules and laws that are there that are not enforced, find out why, and then start changing public idea. I would love to see every avenue possible. Insurance companies put a little brochure in their flyer. Everyone saying that these are the rules of the road for people and for pedestrians and bicyclists.
Yeah, so there's a couple things. There's actually, I think, two big themes that are part of what Fred is saying, and then what I'm getting in an email from a listener named Tom, which I will read now. Tom says, thanks for the show today. I know that in the Netherlands and some cities in the United States, they have built barriers on major roadways between the car lane and the bike lane. There may be a 3-foot bike lane available, but for many people, that is not enough room to safely ride. Any chance that these cities could be building more of what we're seeing in places like the Netherlands? So there's two parts of this. What Tom is saying in this email and what Fred said in the call, one is about infrastructure, investment, et cetera, and the other is about culture. It's about enforcement of the rules, and it's about the way that people interact with each other and what the expectation is. In other words, if you're driving a car and you see a bicycle, does that catch you off guard? Do you think, hey, you're not supposed to be here? Or do you think, oh, cool, no problem, I know how to interact with that? Because every person who's been on a bicycle routinely, or I would say just about everybody, and Jason Partika will probably correct me in a second here, but just about everybody who's decided to try to get to work or get around with a bicycle instead of a car with some routine, everybody's got a story of somebody yelling at them, somebody passing too close or getting dinged. What I think realistically the question is that a rarity or does it feel routine? To Fred, that feels too routine, Jason. That's what I'm hearing from Fred is we don't have enough of a culture where he's even surprised that this is happening. Do you see the culture, first of all, changing, Jason?
I think we do see some change in culture. Like when I ride bike, I've been yelled at too. Like especially if I'm making a left, I'll take the lane and I'll block cars behind me.
What do they
me.
Say?
That, what's it?
What's what, that? What do they say? No curse words, please. But what do they say?
Oh, well, they do. Like it's usually actually a comment I made. So get out of the way, fat word you can't say on the radio, basically stuff like that. And it's kind of funny because if I was in a car with my blinker on, it would be fine. But because I'm on a bike with my hand out,
they think you shouldn't be there.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so. But
how often does that happen?
You know, to me, less than once a month.
Okay.
So, but I don't. I'm more of a, I ride my bus more.
Okay.
And a bike is more of a last mile kind of thing for me than biking across town.
Do you think enforcement? I mean, cars are parked in bike lanes all the time. Mm-hmm. Brett Dahlberg, a former WXXI reporter, did some wonderful work on this last year. And do you see enforcement and that part of the culture changing?
I don't know if we see enforcement changing. Like the new laws themselves help, right? Because just by having those laws,
okay.
It's something, you know, we talked about when teaching people to drive. Now people, new drivers are taught those laws to make those kind of expectations, that kind of thing. And then, you know, police hopefully get to enforce those laws if they have the opportunity. I can't see if they actually are or not, if there's been enough tickets, that kind of thing. And those laws, too, help us with road design. So now that there is a 3-foot passing law, we can say, hey, you know, drivers need 3 feet of room to pass a bike, so
yeah.
You got to make sure that's built into the street design as well.
But what about building street designs that say, okay, we're not just going to trust 3-foot passing requirements. We're going to build that actual physical barrier, as Tom references in the Netherlands or some cities are doing. What do you think?
Yep, protected bike lanes are probably the next leap that we need to make here in Rochester. We don't have very many at all. One of the things we are seeing with new construction, especially new streets, is the bike lanes being put up on top of the curb. So you're not in the street. You're kind of at the sidewalk level, mm-hmm. basically. So that helps people feel safer from the cars, and it creates another
division.
On Lake
Avenue, it makes a big difference for me. When I'm jogging on Lake Avenue, I mean, I see the bike lane. I see where I can be. It's both of them are up and offset away from the road. I think much safer now.
Yep.
I see a big difference.
Yeah, so just having that, even it's called grade separation, just having that separation, not even like a physical barrier, helps a lot. Like one of the things I like to see too is it's something that can help the streetscape is if you have trees along the side of the street, people like trees, it provides shading for the bike path and for the sidewalk. And not for nothing, it's a barrier. If a car does come off the street, it strikes the tree instead of the pedestrian or the bicyclist too. So those are the kind of things that can help. And then I think the last thing we need to talk about too is he mentioned that cars don't have enough room to maneuver around. One thing that's happened is personal vehicles are getting a lot bigger. You know, there's more SUVs and more pickup trucks on the road now than small sedans. Like Ford doesn't even make a sedan anymore. Those things, they're wider. They have big front grills that are more dangerous instead of a hood, that kind of thing too. So on top of street design, I think we need to have a good talk in this country about vehicle design as well, making sure they're a little bit more narrow, a little bit more smaller, so there's enough room on the road.
Let's ask our guest from San Francisco and Shreveport about this. Stacy, in San Francisco, on that subject of infrastructure, you brought it up before, but what would you say to Fred? What would you say to Tom, who are concerned about both the culture of how we get along and interact with different forms of transportation and the actual physical infrastructure itself, Stacy?
this and what I forget her name from Shreveport was saying.
Liz.
I mean, this stuff breaks Liz. This just breaks my heart. I mean, hearing all these issues, you know, that they're going to spend that much money on a highway, or all that you're facing when you are out there riding a bike. I mean, we get that here too. So it's not like it is, you reach a point where you get away from it. In terms of the attitude towards people biking and walking, we need to have a national, if not global, conversation about that this is a valid form of transportation, and it's actually the one we should be doing, you know, considering that we're setting the world on fire. We have a smoke warning coming for Monday for us. And, you know, there are people that are, you know, a few hours from us that have lost and will lose their homes. I mean, this is a real problem. We need to get away from cars. We need to be moving. I mean, or they should be electric. But honestly, we need to get people on bikes and buses and things that are much more sustainable, as Liz was mentioning. And a lot of this is the attitude around it. I mean, there's so much wrapped into car culture and the driver mentality. The head of transportation for LA says, I forget what she called it, but it's basically when you're in that mode, you take that on. So even she, as a person who advocates for walking and cycling and transit all day long, when she's behind the wheel of a car, she can feel herself slip into that entitlement that this is me and this is mine. But the difference between drivers and people who are walking or biking is it's life or death. You know, you when you're behind the wheel of a car and you get all annoyed and you take that out in the way that you operate that vehicle, you can kill someone. And we are the ones that will get killed. So it just should not be life or death. What the caller was saying about and Jason as well about Amsterdam and the separation. These are the things we need to happen. And in places like San Francisco, I'm not as familiar with the layout of Rochester and Shreveport. I can imagine that you could not do this, but here our streets are so close together. Why does every single one of them need to be for cars? Mm-hmm. To me, it's rather than building the expensive building, a protected bike lane, just say, this one's going to be for bikes and this one's going to be for cars, because neither vehicle will have to, you know, walk or go more than like half a block out of their way. You know, it's just such short distances between the spaces that I would encourage anywhere that has, you know, either it's a downtown or whatever, to really consider about making streets as car free, car light as possible. We will be using motor vehicles for a very long time, and especially personal cars as well in places that aren't as densely populated. But we really need to start thinking about, do they need to have every single street? And again, the get changing hearts and minds when you build out those spaces to be more welcoming and they get to use them, I think it can change their attitudes. And the only other thing I wanted to throw in is the police. We have a lot of problems with them as well. They aren't enforcing. And in fact, they harass us at times. I have been for riding in the middle of the road, which is vehicle code in California, that if the lane is not provided, that you have access to the road. In my neighborhood, this quiet little on top of a hill neighborhood, an officer like blared the siren at me for being in the middle of a road that no one else needed to use except for that. And it was not an emergency. And it was, I was just shaken and in tears. And I think that we should have officers on bikes so that they can understand. And I also think that everywhere we should have, before that kid can get a license, they have to know how to ride a bike. Because if nothing else, they may at least learn more of the road. There are more kids out there. That makes drivers safer. And that's the way the Netherlands does it. And that's why they have, even though they drive, they still drive tons in the Netherlands. But those drivers are all more cautious around the cyclists because they were one as a kid and may still be one, or their parents might be out there on bikes.
Yeah.
They just, it's having that in and getting that ingrained into our culture as it's not something for, you know, poor people or losers or where I grew up, the Amish and Mennonite. It's for everyone, and we really need to watch out for them.
Yeah, well said. And I mean, I certainly never use my car as a weapon, but I can tell you, I think I'm my worst self when I'm driving. The way I talk to other people who can't hear me is awful. And just because I, you know, have to wait behind one more light or somebody didn't hit the gas fast enough, that's the worst part of me. I don't know why, what cars do to us. Liz, let me ask you if you can weigh in as well on...
Oh, yes. I've been waiting.
The subject of the infrastructure and the subject of the culture.
So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to one-up Fred. So several years ago, I was working with the mayor's office. I was walking through downtown one afternoon. I was crossing at a major intersection downtown, had the light, had cleared both ways. As I'm in the middle of the intersection, a car comes around from the corner that I'm facing and hits me. Like, I'm the pedestrian. The car literally scoops me up and tosses me off the hood, right? So I was not injured. Police were on the scene very quickly, had blocked things off. They were getting statements and things of that nature. Another motorist was trying to get by in a car, very angry that he was being delayed, drove up on the sidewalk to get around us. So,
wow.
I think you can see from that he was wow. harshly spoken to by police. Wow. Probably should have been arrested, but because, you know, I think that just shows you the again, there is definitely that entitlement that comes with being behind the wheel of a vehicle, but it's also a deadly machine, and we need to remember that every time we're behind the wheel, especially when we tend to, you know, when we get mad at pedestrians and bicyclists and things of that nature. So there is a lot of education that needs to be done. There's a lot of reminding people that cars are always going to win if there is a fight between a pedestrian yeah. and a bicyclist. They're always going to win. And in terms of infrastructure, absolutely. I have seen the type of bollards that you're talking about up in Canada, I think in Ottawa. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's a matter of money. It's a matter of money. It's a matter of the public caring enough about something like this to make it a priority for city budget planners and county budget planners. And so, you know, it's on us when it comes to that.
Yeah. So about 30 seconds apiece, I just want to ask for some final thoughts. Three different cities, three different places on this list of living without a car in American cities. Jason Partika, in 30 seconds, we've talked about what you want to see Rochester do, but realistically, what's the most achievable next step that will take us forward here?
I think the most achievable is just scaling up what we're already doing. You know, make buses more frequent, continue as we redesign roads, just regular maintenance every 20 years, like put bike lanes up on the grade separation, that kind of thing. And we didn't talk about it much, but land use, sometimes sprawl. If there's shorter distances travel, you get less sweaty on the bike and you're less exposed just in general to those kind of collisions.
Liz, in Shreveport, Louisiana, 30 seconds, what is achievable next for you?
Well, achievable is continuing to remind people we do have bike lanes. We've got sharrows. We've got dedicated bike lanes. We've got a great public transit system. They need to try it. It's for everyone, and it works. And land use, I love that. That's a wonderful topic we need to explore. And let's also one day talk about sustainability. It all works together.
And Stacy in San Francisco, what's next? Oh, I lost Stacy for a second. Can you hear Stacy in the booth? Oh, no. Boy, Stacy, if you're talking, I've lost you. Oh, that's too bad.
Oh,
are you there?
Evan.
Yes.
I apologize. I'm used to hitting mute, and I hung up before.
It's a pandemic tick. All right, you got to go quick here. What are you going to do next?
What are we going to do next? Get some of those streets closed. Get some of the follow Paris's lead and get the streets either car free or car light in an alternating fashion so we can get more bike protection faster instead of waiting for those barriers to be built.
I think that's beautiful. And in so many American cities during the pandemic, especially last summer, there were some streets shut down eating outside on the street. You wondered what was going to take root, and the answer was not a whole lot. But, you know, maybe that is a seed that grows slowly over the long term. Stacy Randecker-Bartlett is a mobility consultant in the San Francisco Bay Area. Thank you, Stacy, for making time for the program today.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Liz Swain, Executive Director of Shreveport Downtown Development in Louisiana. Liz, good luck to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Jason Partika from Reconnect Rochester. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great having all three of you, and more connections coming up in a moment.